see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Episode 31, I Seem Fun, The Diary of Jen Kirkman Podcast.
I'll say goodbye to all my sorrow, and by tomorrow, I'll be on my way. I guess the Lord must be in your city.
Stop singing on your show, it's not funny. I know, I'm not trying to be funny, it's I like singing.
But you suck at singing.
I'm so tired.
I know I do, but this is a podcast that celebrates those little fun things in life. And one of my fun things is I like to sit in my room. I like to sing and clutter around the house. So can you get into the mood? Because,
well, here I am, Lord, knocking at your back door. Ain't it wonderful to be where I've always wanted to be?
I mean, you guys never just say, oh, you know what, that thing she does is sort of like this thing I do. And I'm going to experience her joy in it. And this is a great Harry Nilsson song. Or are you going to send an email? I don't get the singing. There's nothing to get. It's just singing. It's not like a hard thing to understand. I know, but are you trying to be a singer? No, I'm just a person. Sometimes you can just do something that you're not even good at because it just, I don't know, you like it. Well, I come here to listen to comedy. Well, I never said it was a comedy podcast. It's more of a, it's a diary. You're getting a glimpse of someone talking to themselves. I think you're negative on this sometimes. Yes, sometimes I am because I'm a person. But if you only listen to the first four episodes, you really can't write a lengthy review about what I'm like. Sorry, bronchial issues. Speaking of breathing free, I've had a bronchial issue for like 10 days. Hello, I Seem Fun friends. Now, my voice was perfect all day at work. And the minute I got home, it started to get fucked up again. It's like the minute I get home and need to talk. I've had some breathing problems the past 10 days. That's why I didn't record an episode last week. I sounded like shit. And I was way too overwhelmed and busy. And there's only certain nights I can record it. So anyway, I'm trying to figure out, is it best to do the inhaler before the show? Or does that bring up too much stuff? So I thought this thing would go away. I tried to record last night and I lost my voice during it too. I basically had a low-grade cold last week, which is very embarrassing for JK to admit because I haven't had a cold in 3 years. And I'm quite snobby about my good digestive health and how I don't get colds. But, you know, I got one. But I know why, because I was stressed out and eating like shit for the first time in a long time. So that's what happened to me. I'm going to try my inhaler. Here, I'll give you something to listen to while I do it. So anyway, but then I went to the doctor and they're like, you think you have phlegm in your throat, but it's your vocal, your bronchial tubes are inflamed. So you're going to have that urge to clear your throat, but there's nothing there. Ah, right. So I'm going to do my inhaler right now. So anyway, my lungs have, you know, everything's been inflamed for a while. But I'm going to, as I do my inhaler, I'll give you something to listen to. Oh, I like this song. This is a good song for, even though it's not summertime, it might put you in the mood for it because you can get ready and think about next year's. Where is it? It just went away. Oh, okay, here it is. I can skip the advertisement 5 seconds. You can listen to this while I use my inhaler. See, I made sure my voice was okay the minute I hit record. It started doing this. It was completely fine a minute ago. Oh, not this song. Stuck in the Middle with You. I didn't mean to fucking play that. Sorry, you guys. Here it is. Just enjoy this while I use my inhaler, okay? Okay, I'm back. That wasn't so bad, right? Anyway, I was thinking of New York City because I miss it there, you guys. I know I was just there, but I usually go there every December. I take a flight there, stay for a couple nights, see old friends, maybe pop in to some places to do comedy, do a quick set, have some fun, see the lights. I love Christmas in New York. And then I'll take the train back to Massachusetts to see my family. But this year I'm not going to the East Coast for the holidays. I went over Thanksgiving. I kind of count that. I just need a vacation that doesn't involve getting on a plane. I get a few weeks off a year at my job, and I use those weeks to go tour and do stand-up. So I haven't not been just sitting with like a night or two to watch a movie in a long time. And once the new year starts, it's going to do that again. I think that my next vacation... allotted vacation time off. We don't get to pick our own. That's how showbiz works. Is in March. And I believe that week I'll be in Australia. I think I'm doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Now, don't get too excited. It's not definite yet. My dates and their dates have to coincide. But that would mean I won't have a week off until July. Or even a long weekend. But, so I need to sit right. And again, I don't need to, well, we're going to get into this in the Christmas episode, but yeah, Australia, that will be exciting, except I've never flown to Australia alone. That's like the last, if you ever told me I'd even be flying to Australia at all, I wouldn't believe you. I flew there years ago with work friends for work purposes. But you know, when you let go of fear, you do it in stages, right? Like, I always had a crippling fear of flying, like a true belief that the plane was going to crash, that we were not safe, that every time a plane landed, that I had just cheated death. Then I intellectually understood how planes work and that I wasn't at all in danger, but I still had that fight or flight panic overproduction of adrenaline response because I've also had panic disorder my whole life, which I do not... I call it in remission because I don't have random panic attacks anymore. Or if I do, it's like a little blip and I know how to breathe it down. But, and that took, if you're asking, 20 years of therapy and many meditations and books and all kinds of things. It's a full-time job. So I would just find what you know. It wasn't just an overnight process, but I would just find whatever worked for me and a bunch of different things happen and keep doing it. But anyway, my point is, so then you get on a plane and you know it's not going to crash, but your body does that same fight or flight thing with the adrenaline when the plane takes off and then your mind starts going. And then the one thing you can't do that you could do, let's say if you're ever having a panic attack at a mall, you could leave the mall. You can't leave the plane. So it's like that stuff stayed with me. And that's why I take this the tiniest bit of Klonopin when I fly and not, you know, I could still get off the plane and drive. It's just the littlest bit so that when my natural adrenaline starts, you know, gearing up and roaring up as the plane is going down the runway to taxiing, my body's like, oh, it's time to panic, right? Oh, God, I'm sorry, you guys. I really, like, don't want to record an episode right now, but I feel bad that I didn't the last time. So, you know, that kind of fight or flight will start to kick in where your body is freaking out. And, God damn it. It's just bronchial stuff. It's not a cold. I don't send me remedies. It's just, it's the time of night when I should be using my, remedies that I have to do, but I think they're going to make it worse for the recording. So I'm going to hold off. But anyway, so, so even if you know you're okay, like sometimes it's, you still have the adrenal fight or flight response. And so that's why I take the tiniest bit of Klonopin when I fly. But I still have little things here and there that like it's safer with people I know, or even if it's not safer, at least I'm with them. And I like the feeling of being alone and being hurtled through the air and no one knows where I am and, you know, no one can help me. That's just a, kind of like alone in life fear. And so when I flew to Australia the first time, you know, I thought, okay, I've conquered the fear of flying in America. I fly to Philly, New York, East Coast, no problem. Flown to London. That was okay. And then we got this offer to go to Australia with Chelsea Lately. And my boss actually took me aside and he said, if you don't want to go, you won't be like made fun of or penalized. Like you can work from here. And I almost said, I mean, I knew then like, Jen, you're getting a free trip to Sydney and this is what you do for a living. And people who do what you do for a living will inevitably have to go around the world at some point. So grow up. This is your chance. And you can either just be so afraid of life that you don't live it, or you can just say yes to everything and realize that the fear you're building up in your head is the only bad thing that's going to happen to you. Because weirdly, the fear is never of anything normal. Oh, I'm afraid I'll get restless legs on the flight. I'm afraid it'll crash. I'm afraid I'll lose my luggage. No. It's just a panicked feeling of being alone up there. So I made it through that trip pretty good, and I never thought I would fly alone to Australia, and it looks like I'll be doing it in March. So that's like the final frontier. I think space would be my next frontier, but that's not happening. Cut to me finding out I have a big fan base in space, and I have to go there. So the holiday episodes are going to come up next week. Oh, I'm in bed. Here I am. And I want to thank you guys. So anyway, last week I didn't have an episode out, and I think this one's going to be a short one because I just can't breathe and it's driving me crazy because I don't like the way my voice sounds. But I sent you guys a special announcement, and a lot of you guys wrote, the announcement was that I don't have a show. I don't have a podcast this week, which I hate because I have my favorite podcasts and I hate when they're not available. So I wrote to you guys saying that if you want to hear my voice, I can send some free audiobooks to the first five people and the first five people who truly qualify, like people who haven't seen me live. Okay. Now I'm a little bit like, how do all of you that listen do not have my audiobook? Come on, dudes. I have no advertising on this show. It does cost me money to put out a podcast, and that's my business. I'm not blaming you guys. Like I enjoy doing it, so I'm not going to stop, but it was amazing how many people were like, oh, I still don't have your book. Folks, that's how you make someone a bestseller. You buy their book in the first week. I ended up on the bestseller list, thank God. But for my next book, we can't be slacking like this, all right? But if you guys go to tantor.com, T-A-N-T-O-R.com, and Google search, not Google, but like search my name, my audiobook is there. This audiobook company is having a 50% off sale for all of December. So you can get my audiobook in many different formats that are half off. So if you didn't win, I hope you'll take advantage of the half off if of it all. But you guys sent me some really nice things and it made me feel good. And I'll read some of your Christmas letters on the bonus episode coming up. San Francisco, I'm doing an I Seem Fun live podcast taping at the Brava Theater February 8th. Tickets are already on sale right now. And what I love about it is you can look at the little theater chart and see how many people have purchased tickets. And it seems to be selling well for something this far out. So it's only one show, and I'll be signing your books if you bring them after and taking pictures. And it's going to be a live I Seem Fun podcast. So anything can happen. I will be there with my Aero bed. And I have a special musical guest, my friend Brendan Hines. And he will be performing some songs. Maybe we'll do a duet if I ever get my voice back. And if you go to my website, jenkirkman.com, and you scroll down to tour dates, you'll see it February 8th in San Francisco. You click that link. It takes you right to buying tickets. So I hope you guys can come. I could not get them to charge less than $20. They wanted $25. I said, I don't want to charge people that, so let's do $20. And that was as low as they could go, because this is a festival and the whole thing costs money, and it's not like it's going into my pocket. So that's just kind of how it works. And that's that. Oh, tickets are selling pretty nicely. But let's sell out. I'd love to sell out the bottom floor. I think it seats about 300. What else? I'm so sorry. I think this is going to be a boring podcast, but I cannot breathe. And I was like totally fine 5 minutes ago. So even though it's not the holiday I wanted to talk about, well, I wanted to tell this story. I realized I never told it, and I never know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say about doing talk shows and stuff. But I got to be a guest on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno this year, and it wasn't doing a stand-up spot. It was doing the interview. So most comics will do a spot and then maybe go sit on the couch. But this was just for my book. I did like an 11-minute interview with Jay, and it was kind of a last-minute call. And it was so interesting because Matt Lauer was on. He was the guest before me. And it was like his big comeback appearance, because everyone was like hating him because they were like, you got Ann Curry fired, which I don't care if he did get Ann Curry fired. I thought she was boring. So fire away anyone that bores me on morning talk shows that I don't watch. But anyway, so my job was to bring the comedy after. But Matt's segment was perfectly funny. You know, it's not like they were really going to sit there and hash it out. But you know, the Tonight Show is just this weird thing that I think a lot of comedians have special meaning in their hearts for, even though it is not the same anymore, because I think Seinfeld said it best when he said, nobody's doing Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. Like, what, once Johnny left, he left with that. So you're not on the Tonight Show. You're on the Jay Leno Show. You're on soon to be Jimmy Fallon Show, or you are on Conan. So, and I get that, but there is something about the fact that it does get these big ratings, and you know that it's just that kind of like, hey, this is easy to watch. This won't offend me. I'm putting it on at 11:30, you know, everyone in America watching it type thing. There's so much to watch that you're not going to get like famous the next day. But one of my favorite stories is a story about Joan Rivers from her great book, Enter Talking. What I loved about this book is it's kind of a backdoor history of New York City and Greenwich Village in the 60s. And so there's Joan Rivers. She's really the only female stand-up comedian. She's not doing like skits and characters. She originally started out that way, but then she went into stand-up. And this book just tells all about, you know, she does all this stuff that we comics do, you know, goes to open mics, takes a tape recorder with her. Now, it's not built into her phone. She was taking a reel-to-reel tape recorder with her. Those are like heavy, like a suitcase. And taping her sets. And she came up on the scene with Woody Allen, Dick Cavett, and Bill Cosby. And then back then there were singers too. So Barbara Streisand and Bob Dylan, throw them in the mix. And everyone got famous. But Joan, you know, she was in her early 30s, and they'd all been traipsing around the village for 10 years, and everyone had kind of moved to LA or stayed in New York, but got famous. And it wasn't happening for Joan, and she couldn't even get managers to represent her anymore. People were like, look, honey, it's over. And she was just about to break, like just hitting her stride, you know? And she said that she went to see Lenny Bruce one night, and it blew her mind that you could be honest and talk about your life. So she said she was kind of changed after that. And she went to start doing material about things that were going on in her life. And she said she was wearing this coat on stage one night that she said, I forget exactly how it went, that I think she was dating a professor who maybe already had a girlfriend, or she found out he was married, but this guy broke her heart, but he bought her this great coat. So she wore the coat on stage and was like, this is like, you know, in a funny way, like, this is all I have, but this kind of thing, you know, didn't work out. And the gay people started getting really into her. And then that came with, like, you know, she was getting more and more honest. And then she had been married for a brief period. It didn't work out. She was living with her parents still, age 33. She got a writing job on Candid Camera. Now, you think these things, you know, like, she was saying, like, back in before she got the job, it would have been, like, the greatest achievement for her to work on Candid Camera. But she was like, once you get there, you realize it's a grind and you're not letting who you are come through. You're just being told what to write. And, you know, so she basically, Bill Cosby guest hosts The Tonight Show one night. And I guess they have this terrible comic that bombs. And Bill was really mad on behalf of Joan because he knew that she couldn't even get like an audition to do stand up on The Tonight Show. So Bill says to the producers, look, Joan Rivers is not going to be worse than that awful comic we had last night. She's an original voice. She's been around forever. You've got to give her a chance. And the producers were like, well, we're not going to put her on as a stand up. She can sit down and do an interview segment with Johnny and we'll call her a girl writer. Which is so amazing when you think about it, that just like you had to put the word girl in front of it. And she was like 33. So she sits down. Now, this is the best part about anything in life, in show business, and is all the people telling you no sometimes is always like the middle management that they don't know how to make a decision on their own. So they're saying, no, 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 you can't come on the show. But Johnny has no idea that... you know, someone he's going to click so well with, someone he's going to love, has been trying to get on the show forever. He's just not involved in that minutia of who's booking the comics, you know? And it is one of those things where it's like, well, if only he'd known, like maybe he would have let her. It's like, no, not that either. That's just kind of what it's like. Like you either just don't get picked and you know in your heart, my God, they would love me. Or you don't get it. Does that make sense? So Joan comes on. And it goes amazingly well. And I think one of the jokes she said is Johnny said, you don't think guys like smart women? And she goes, oh my God, no one ever put their hand up a woman's dress looking for her library card. It was so funny. And she said the next day she went back to work. She got fired at Candid Camera because they now realized she left early to go tape Carson. And he was like, Alan Funt was like, you made a big mistake, Joan, big mistake. So she goes to cash her check. And she knows that she's going to have to beg them to cash it early and forget about the hold that's on it because she needs the money. And they were like, right away, Miss Rivers. And she was like, what? And they're like, we loved you on The Tonight Show last night. She was like, oh. And then she gets home. Imagine no cell phones or anything. So she gets home and her mother has been like, all these agents are calling. Like, you never have to temp again in your life or take these writing jobs. Like, that was it. She began going on the road full time after that. And becoming a regular on Johnny. So I think stories like that, you know, and Roseanne getting discovered overnight, stories like that really make The Tonight Show special to people. Now, we all know now, all of us comics, that since there's 97 late night shows, and there is just no tipping point kind of moments anymore like that, that's not going to happen. You know, and Jay has a totally different persona than Johnny. Johnny was a kingmaker and Jay is just supportive and like, yeah, you know, he's there, but it's not like people aren't looking to be crowned by him. So that's not why I was excited to be on The Tonight Show, but I was just excited to be part of that legacy, even if it's the newer legacy, you know, even if it's, if you like Star Trek, if it's that shitty movie with the whale and not like the original one, I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't like Star Trek. That's all I know. But it meant a lot for me to be a guest on The Tonight Show. And I had a bunch of stories prepared, but what I never talked about was when I posted on Facebook and all my various social media places, people were like, I'm not going to watch, fuck Jay Leno, because they're still upset about the Letterman and the Conan thing. And it's like, you know, if you want to support the next whoever, then watch the damn show. Like, maybe you would have liked something about what I said, or would have made you want to buy my book. But it's actually really cool that Jay Leno had me on, because I will tell you, there are a few other late night hosts whom I personally idolize and don't feel I'm worthy of, who their bookers won't let me on the show because my material, as a stand-up, certain bookers won't let me on the show because when you get to a certain level and people know who you are, you don't always have to put a tape together for them to watch, but you can send a manuscript of your jokes. And that's actually more dangerous, because then someone can go, I don't think divorce is funny. Well, trust me, it is, because I go around the country talking about it. It's like being a politician. Like, I take the pulse. I go around the country. I see what people are responding to. And then someone who never leaves their office in Burbank is like, or New York City is like, yeah, that won't fly on TV. And it's like, it totally will. By the way, doing stand-up on TV is way easier than you think. The only reason it's nerve-wracking is because you do have to like say everything perfectly and keep it to a certain time. So when you have that kind of pressure, it makes you stand up there and go, what if I forget everything I say and I draw a blank? And it like makes you so nervous that you shake all over, and then you try to not look like you're shaking. So, but in the sense that it's easy, I mean that crowds really in a TV studio setting are there to be supportive. And usually there's a warm-up guy that you don't see who's warming up the crowd in between act breaks and commercial breaks, sometimes throwing candy at them, sometimes saying, hey, look, a comic's coming out, be good to them. I mean, you're probably not going to bomb unless you're terrible, but they usually don't let terrible people on, you know? And I just thought that was very interesting. So I was actually really psyched about Jay Leno because the booker of The Tonight Show is someone that has known of me for a while, and I knew him casually. And he said to Jay, you know, we have this 10-minute segment. There's this girl, Jen Kirkman. She went to Emerson College, just like you. She's from Boston. She doesn't want kids. Jay also doesn't want kids, he and his wife. His wife's a major feminist activist. So he was actually the most responsive to me out of all the pitches that were given for me to come on a late-night talk show to plug my book. Jay was more than happy to have me. And so I'm not like, oh, I like him now because he was good to me. But what I mean is I find the hiding in the closet and all that stuff to be so bizarre, you know, and so competitive. And I do believe that people say he kind of pretends he's, you know, oh, I don't have an agent, or I understand all that. But that's like sometimes what certain people do to make it, because it's so hard to make it, you know. It's not my style. But then you have to realize all these guys in the late night wars are just white guys in the late night wars. Like, it's going to be okay. Like, you don't have to pick a side. There is not technically one more altruistic than the other. It's just that whoever gets the show stolen from them seems to be a saint suddenly, you know? And so it was very bizarre when Conan was given The Tonight Show and Jay didn't want to leave and they didn't know what to do, and they gave him 10 o'clock. It ruined everything. I mean, it was the dumbest idea ever. And it killed, you know, NBC's 10 o'clock procedural shows. I mean, it ruined everything, you know, but that's the network's fault as much as Jay's. And again, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that Conan and Letterman are sleeping just fine at night. They don't need you on the internet, not watching someone you're a fan of for a 10-minute segment. And so, but what I was thinking about all this has to do with the holidays is, every time I go home, my sister has this party, Kirkman Christmas, and it's a week before Christmas. So it'll be this week. I can't go because I'd have to get on a red eye after work and it's not worth it. And there's like a million people there and, you know, I get overwhelmed sometimes. But I always have the same conversations with my uncles, as we all do with our uncles. Mine goes like this. So you do The Tonight Show? No, I've never. How come? And in their mind, it's like, well, because you're not funny. Meanwhile, it's like really just hard to get on it, especially as a guest. So everyone that is currently not on the Tonight Show, it is not because they are not funny. It's just because it hasn't happened, you know? And my uncles would be like, Jennifer, Jay Leno went to Emerson just like you. You go down there and tell him you went to Emerson and he'll let you on. They've been saying that to me since I moved to LA. Now, they're not wrong that Emerson and all that stuff helped, but I'll get into why later. So to my family, because I haven't been on the Tonight Show, my extended family, then I'm not a success and something's going weird, right? I could say I'm on this and that has a better demographic for the people that'll buy my CD. They don't care. Not on the Tonight Show? Better luck next year. Do you need money? No, I don't need money. I'm a TV writer. No, well, you know, you're not on the Tonight Show. So I find out that I'm going to be on the show. I do a pre-interview over the phone. And the producer I'm doing the pre-interview with was like, Jay read your book and has all these questions. He really loved that you minored in modern dance and thought that was funny. He wanted to know like all these specific things. And I had to go to another, I had to go to some kind of event that night, the night before the Tonight Show. And the producer was like, Jay's going to be at that event. Go up and introduce yourself. He wants to talk to you. So I was like, okay. So I show up at the event. I walk over to Jay, goes, Jen, nice to see you. Now, I don't care if, you know, he doesn't recognize me from, you know, my mother. He knows the comedy. He's seen you. No, that's not why. But, you know, he saw my picture on the book and he knew someone would be walking towards him at some point. And he said, hey, Jen, but that's more than most people do in show business. And maybe he's doing it so everyone likes him. I don't care. It's a really good quality. And so then he started talking to me. He's from Massachusetts as well. Our relatives, like in my extended family, live like right near his. He's like, you ever get back there? I'm like, yeah, you know. He's like, ugh. You know, but I don't want to tell like his tales out of school. But he was basically like, look, the homophobia and racism in Massachusetts is like unmatched. And, you know, I don't want to talk to my neighbor that's like, hey, see any faggots walking down the street? What's that like? And he's like, all right, Mrs. Henderson. Yes, I see gay people. Like, it's, we don't, you know, I don't have a problem with it. It's, we don't use the F word here. And I was saying the same thing. I was like, my uncles, then I told him the story about how my uncles think since I haven't been on the Tonight Show, I haven't made it. And he's like, oh, great. You can do that story tomorrow night. I'm like, perfect. So we chat. That was it. I let him go mingle. He was really smart and cool. Not at all condescending like some older male comics can be, like acting like I just started out because he's never heard of me. You know, he totally loves talking to comedians. He loves to just talk shop. And he said to me at the party, you know, Mavis and I never had kids. This is not important to us. It's not what we want to do. You know, he's like, I don't even want to answer that question anymore. And I was like, I hear you. So then the next day when I'm in the studio, I'm doing my makeup at the, you know, in my little dressing room, and Jay comes in to say hi. Now, every host usually comes in to say hi to the guest, but he loves to talk about stand-up. So he came in, shut the door, stayed. And we were talking about, you know, he was like, what clubs do you go up at? Blah, 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 blah. Do you ever do Vegas? And I'm like, yeah, I've done Vegas a bunch. But, you know, I said, I really feel like I'm in the wrong era. Like, I feel like I would have been that broad that hangs out with the Rat Pack. Because Jay was telling me he used to, some of his first gigs were like when the mafia ran Vegas and that kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah, I feel like I could have ran with that crowd. He's like, they would have like attacked you, sexually assaulted you. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, everyone thinks they're the one broad that can get through. But it was all drama all the time. And he's like, it's such a much better time in comedy for women now. I'm like, oh, I guess you're right. I mean, it was a really funny conversation and he was laughing and he asked me more stuff about the book. I was like, yeah, let's just talk. And I had all my sound bites ready. But when I got out there, we actually did just talk. He didn't just stare past me and look at the monitor and say things that didn't make sense. I remember one time in 2000, I was laying in bed watching the Tonight Show in New York City. And I was just laying in bed, like flipping channels. And Jen Aniston was on. And I stopped and watched for a second. And he goes, so you cook for Brad, back when she was married to Brad Pitt. So you cook for Brad? She goes, oh, God, no. She goes, I'm such a bad cook. She goes, I'll order a pizza for Brad. And then he just looked at her like he didn't know what to say. And he goes, you ever order a pizza and then tell Brad you made it? And she's like, nope, can't say that I do that. It was like the worst interview. So I don't know what it was. And if you can watch the interview and maybe think it was terrible, but I... for myself, know that when I was there, he was making eye contact with me and asking me questions that weren't pre-planned. And I really appreciated that. And I think he may have given me a little more courtesy because I was a first-timer on the show and he loves comedians. But he never said anything about female comedy or, you know, he just is a real comics comic. And so I left with a very good feeling about having done the show. And that was it. But I never really told that experience on the show. So anyway, so I tell my little anecdote. I'm like, Jay, my uncle's always told me to drive over to the lot and introduce myself. He's like, oh yeah, that would have gone real well. You know, something like that. Because that's just not how it works. Now, what's interesting is I write a book. I have a normal like publicist and I have the booker who knows me and all that coming together. Then that's where you can... maybe between all the other books out there and all the other publicists and all the other comedians, maybe that fact that we went to the same college and really feel like we didn't, you know, it didn't make us who we were. Going to the open mics made us who we were. So maybe that detail we had in common and being from Massachusetts was what grabbed him. After I had already proved I wrote a book, I'm a normal person in show business. Like, you don't just drive up to the lot and announce, like, where you're from and think someone's going to be like, oh, my God, Massachusetts? Hang on a minute. Let me fire Kevin Eubanks, the band leader. You're in. So I tell that story, and then I put it on Facebook, and I email all my uncles to let everyone know, hey, I talked about you guys tonight. But, like, it was done with love. You know, it wasn't like – and no one ever got back to me. So if I go to the Christmas party this year and they say – I wish I was going to the Christmas party so they could say, you do the Tonight Show? Go, yeah, I did it. And I told a joke about how you guys said I should go up and introduce myself, and Jay thought that would be the most ridiculous thing you could ever do. But I got big laughs. They would probably still stare at me and be like, so now what? Like, it just would never end. But anyway, shout out to Jay Leno. Ooh-hoo! Oh, I can't even do that. He was super cool. And white dudes out there on the internet, it's not your battle to fight, you know, don't worry about Conan, Jay, Dave, they're all friends again. And maybe not Conan, and Conan let me on his show too. He's like, but you know, I'm just saying, like, if someone tells you they're going to be on a show that's kind of an institution and you're a fan of that person, just be happy for them on that level. Don't be like, I can't watch. I have a moral boundary about this. Oh, piss poss. That's right. I said piss poss. I'm not bleeping it either. I'll go for the R-rated rating on this one. Jennifer, is Jay going to be mad that you're telling stories that he's not homophobic? What if he wants people to think he is so he's more relatable? No, I don't think Jay wants people to think he's homophobic, Mom. I don't know. I feel like if I were you, I would delete that pot. But, you know, I don't know. Well, I don't even want to hear from that guy tonight. I kicked him to the curb before he could even say anything.
I think Jay Leno's okay. I just, like, I don't know. Like, his hair is gray. He's, like, really old, right? He's, like, 80.
No, I think he's, like, 60, but it's always been kind of gray.
Oh. My friend said if your pubic hair starts to go gray, you can't get electrolysis after that because it'll still, it won't kill the nerve and it'll still grow back. So you have to like predict the year your pubic hair is going to go gray and then electrolysis before that. So just so you know, I'm like, I'm not old enough for my pubic hair to go gray yet, but thank you. Well, I don't know. You're not, are you 39? Yeah, that's like, oh my God. You look pretty good for your age, though. I know. But that's like, I don't know. It's like so weird. Okay, well, thank you for pointing out that it's weird. And I don't worry about my pubic hair, okay? I'm just trying to be nice. God, you're so sensitive for a comedian. You guys are supposed to be funny all the time. Fuck the haters. So, even though it's not the holiday episode yet, but I'll have more to talk about on that. I read this great article in the Huffington Post called Did It's a Wonderful Life Get It Right? I mean, Get It Wrong. And this is what I've been wondering because I love the movie It's a Wonderful Life. Love, love, love. Watch it every year. I think the acting's amazing. I get all rah-rah about Mr. Potter and when people tell him off. I love anyone telling... If you tell someone off on Christmas Eve and you don't take their money and you make them sit in their own value system and you just look triumphant, you run out in the snow. I mean, I love it. Right down to Mr. Magoo, Scrooge, you know, just like some mean meanie with all the money. Someone's going to stand up to them on Christmas. Yeah. I love it. There's so many good things about It's a Wonderful Life. But my biggest problem, well, my favorite scene is when George has passed out and he's being visited by the angel. And the angel shows him what his wife Mary would be if George had never existed. And he's like, I don't know if you want to see this. I mean, honestly, if you had never known anything about the movie, and there's this scene where this old man who's supposed to be an angel is shaking the shoulders of a man who has actually tried to kill himself, like about to kill himself, right? Who's passed out unconscious. So now there's angels, there's suicide. It can get dark in that movie. So he's shaking George. You don't even want to know what happened to Mary. You don't even want to know. I thought it was going to be like a Large Marge from Pee-wee's Big Adventure moment where she drives by in a, you know, 18-wheeler and is like, wah! Like that's what happened to Mary. She became some weird like Beetlejuice demon, you know? I don't even want you to see what happened to Mary. Where is she? Where is she? Where is she? Whatever the angel's name is, I couldn't think of it. Charlie? No. Where is she? Clarence. She's locking up the library, George. I'm like, rewind. She's locking up the library. What is that? Was she locking children inside of it and going to torch it? Oh, no, she's just locking it up. Oh, because her job is a librarian in a small town. Oh, but she's not married. Oh, she's got glasses on. Oh, my God, she's 25 and single and has a job. Oh, my God. She's an old maid, George. She's an old maid. I mean, you would have expected him to be like, she ripped someone's trachea out with her teeth. That's what she did, George, because she never had love. But no, she's closing up a library and they're screaming like it's a Hitchcock movie. Her only boyfriend is Dewey Decimal. Here's my problems with the movie. So George goes to Mary's house. Now, George wants to travel the world, see things. He doesn't even want to. I mean, he's like Clooney. He's like, I don't even want to get married. Not to you or to anyone, he says to Mary. And then because they're standing so close, sharing a phone receiver, after he screams in her face, I don't want to be married to you or anybody. I don't want this life. I have to get out of this town. He's so passionate about it. They start like making out. Now, in a realistic movie, that kind of passion and we disagree on life, but oh, damn it, I want you, would lead to like a one-night stand and a possible friendship with benefits. But it's like in that moment of passion, he just gave up everything he wants to do, everything of who he is. And next, you know, they're getting married. And he decided to work for the savings and loan company that his father did to keep it out of the mean man Potter's hands. But I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. As a woman, if a guy was like, I don't want to marry you or anyone, and I was the type of woman that wanted to be married and have kids like Mary, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, I want to kiss you so hard right now. You just said the opposite of what I want with my life, and you're yelling at me. It's always been a sticking point for me. Like, I guess we're just supposed to assume that love took him over. But I think these days we're a little more practical than that. These days, Mary would have had brunch with her girlfriends like, George wants to travel the world. I want to have kids. I mean, I don't know where we're at right now. You know, he came over last night and we made out, but I honestly think that was just a passion thing. Like, I think if he could really have me, he maybe not want me. So yeah, you're right, girl. He only likes you because it's a chase. That's why. Well, I don't know what to do. I mean, that's what it would really look like. You don't like make out and get married after you just declared who you are and then go do everything you're not. That was my first problem with it. I know it's like a movie and it's romantic in every sense of the word, but I'm just, you know, for the sake of fun here. Then at the ending of the movie, I was always like, whoa, wait, all these people dumping money. This is just the money that was stolen from him by Potter. This is just the money that was taken out of the savings and loan. People are giving George their money, but it's not his money. They're giving it to him to put back into the savings and loan so he can keep that business going. And it's never going to be a rich moneymaker. He's not going to be Bank of America. He's going to be, you know, local hometown bank. Credit union even. And they're like, cheers. Then his brother comes back from the army. He's all decorated and, you know, he's shipping out again. They're like, cheers to George Bailey, the richest man in the world. And I'm like, but he's not like literally rich. He just broke even, right? Like, I honestly didn't know that for the longest time. I was asking people, like, can anyone tell me if they mean richest, meaning like riches and life of family and friends? But if you don't like your old drafty house and your daughter won't stop playing piano and she's making you nuts and you're so regretful of all the things you never did that you try to kill yourself, just because you had a dream or maybe an angel really visited him, that's it. He now has perspective. It sounds to me like I get mad at Mary, like, Mary, the man that you loved had all these dreams of seeing the world. He bought suitcases. He was going to put stamps all over them, stickers of his travels where he'd been. So that must have been attractive to you, Mary. But now that he's done a complete 180 and he's just your put upon husband with all those kids, you're fine with that? So you're fine with he didn't do his dream, but you did yours. I will never understand from a modern perspective that movie. And I get the message, appreciate what you have. You make a difference in everybody's life. If you hadn't existed, certain people's lives would look a certain way perhaps. And I totally think that's a great message. But this guy wrote this great article in the Huffington Post that kind of says, I don't want to plagiarize him. I'll just read some of the things he says that I agree with. And it's about raising children. It seems a majority of parents teach their children to sacrifice their dreams for financial security. They encourage their sons and daughters to pursue employment that promises steady paychecks, the same type of passionless careers they and their parents before them endured until retirement. What if we encouraged our children, siblings, and spouses to follow their life's passions? Imagine if George Bailey's wife, Mary, pulled George aside and said, I know you're miserable working at the savings and loan. Why don't we find someone to buy the business? Maybe there's a person in New York City who's tired of the fast pace and noise and dreams of owning a small business in a quiet community. Let's run an ad in the New York Times classifieds until we find the right person who shares our ideals. And then one of Mary said, George, you'll be free to follow your dream. Let me help you find a way to do that. This guy says, shouldn't supporting the heart's desires of our family and friends be a requirement of love? He says, that's what my parents and sister did for me 8 Christmases ago when I decided to step away from a secure decade-long advertising job to pursue my dream of writing books and screenplays. Their unwavering support inspired the grandest adventure of my life. This guy says, but I would weep happier tears if in the script his loved ones joined together and said, let's do everything in our power to help George become an architect. That's who he really is deep down inside. And in this new version of It's a Wonderful Life, little Zuzu would look up to her father and say, every time someone realizes his dreams, an angel gets his wings. That's right, George would smile and say, that's right. See, I think this guy is dead on. Now, it's fine for a movie from the 40s or whatever. But in general, I think your partner in life has to move you forward. You have to move each other forward. And to tell people, you're not happy with this now, but you'll like it later. We can do that later. It makes me wildly uncomfortable. Wildly uncomfortable. And I always felt sad for George at the end of the movie. Like, but you never did design buildings and you never did see the world. Like, I hope those townspeople threw enough money on their couple traveler's checks, C-H-E-Q-U-E-S, thank you, in the pile so they could go on a damn trip. But just like this guy, I will watch that movie again and again and again. It's almost like Kickstarter is the new It's a Wonderful Life, right? If you want to see if you're loved, start a Kickstarter. See who donates. See who shows up at the house with a basket full of ones. The other thing about It's a Wonderful Life was I liked that girl, that blonde girl, that was sitting at the soda fountain with the young Mary, and George was working the soda fountain. And she goes, I like him. And Mary goes, oh, you like every boy. And the blonde goes, what's wrong with that? That's right. What's wrong with that? You like every boy. And she becomes a prostitute later in the movie. I mean, come on. You can be a librarian or a prostitute, honey. Pick what you want. And if you don't want either one of those horrible jobs, you can be a wife. It would be fun to see a modern update. Or maybe it wouldn't. Who knows? I definitely don't know what's fun because I'm sitting in my bedroom with candles on talking to a microphone. Unclear of how my voice sounds. But I like that little girl that was like, she liked George Bailey. She liked every boy. I think she had a lot of spunk in her. And I feel like that would have been the right choice for him. Go around the world with this broad. And she'll wear some off-the-shoulder little sundress in Ibiza. Anyway, God bless. So maybe in a parallel universe, he's doing just that. And at the very least, it's not a real person, so we don't have to get very upset about it. Or do we? All right. What was else I was going to talk to you about? Oh. On that note, Elf should win an Oscar. It needed an Oscar for Will Ferrell's acting. I thought it's still my favorite Christmas movie of all time. But there was an article in the Huffington Post, too, about somebody wrote why Elf is the worst movie in like 6 reasons. And one of them was James Caan would never be in the publishing business. Oh, who cares? Who do you know? You don't know anything about the publishing business. And they wouldn't work on Christmas Eve. Well, maybe they did this year because the company was fucking going under, which is what every company does on Christmas Eve in movies. Every movie about any company at Christmas, they're about to go under on Christmas Eve. You can't have were they going to shut on December 15th for the holidays and then have a miracle on the 16th? No one gives a fuck about December 16th. The 24th is when it all comes down to it. Do you hang out with your family or do you save your business? Or does someone from your family come in, say fuck off, and you go do your own thing, which in turn leads to so much love that it comes up with an idea that changes the business. You go write a movie, you dumb op-ed columnist. How did 52 minutes go by already? Anyway, so that's my point. Not going home for the holidays this year will not get to explain to my family that, although I did not get famous overnight from being on The Tonight Show, nor did I expect to, that Jay was wonderful, that I finally did this thing you've been asking me about for 16 years, and no answer. Nobody's home. Ding dong, I was on The Tonight Show. Huh? Leave it at the door. No, I want to come in and tell you I was that thing you bug me about every year. I know who it is. And I will be watching Elf and It's a Wonderful Life all during my 2 weeks off. How's that sound? I think that's it. I feel like I wanted to like advertise something to you guys. Not advertise, but tell you guys about something really cool. But I can't remember what it is. Oh, well. Yeah, I'm going to go rest these pipes. I need to breathe. I need to breathe. I don't know what that is. Thank you guys for enjoying my parents' Christmas episode. They were very excited about it. I think I already talked about that. Anyway, jenkirkman.com/tour dates. Tickets are on sale. I'm doing Gilda's Laugh Fest. And I'm doing like the dirty late night show. I don't know what that means. I think it just means my material might have some swears in it. And has adult themed, but not like X-rated adult themes, like adult themes, like marriage, death, divorce. But that's going to be Friday, March 15th, I think. 2 shows, 9 and 11 p.m. at McFadden's. So I'm headlining those 2 shows where it's just me, I think, doing an hour. And then I sign and sell books after. Tickets are now on sale. Go to my website, jenkirkman.com/tour dates. Scroll down. I think what's on sale right now are packages. So you can buy like 3 shows together for like $100 and something. And then I think individual tickets go on sale a little later. if you join my email list, I send out an email once a week. It's from this thing called MailChimp. There is no spam. No one sells your addresses. I wouldn't even know how to do that. I would never do it. It's fucking disgusting. I don't take any money from people unless they buy a book or a CD. So you can get on that weekly email list. It just comes out every Friday and it tells you in advance when tickets go on sale for things. And there's links and there's free ticket giveaways for stuff. So it's really good to get on my email list. And that way you will know what's going on. My 2014 tour dates are not worked out yet because I'm a little in flux on what my schedule is going to be and what I'm going to be working on as a writer here in LA. So it's kind of like, I don't know exactly. So I haven't booked a lot yet. But there's offers out to places and my agents and I are working on it. And I know all the places you want me to come and I promise I will come there once I, tour full time for a living. But if I'm not coming to your, oh, this is what I wanted to say. So many people wrote me, I know you'd never come to North Carolina. I know you'd never do this. You guys have to get that out of your head. I get 12 Fridays off a year with which to do stand up. And I've given my agent a list of all the places I want to go. And it's basically everywhere. I performed in Alaska, Tennessee, Florida, all over Texas. Like I perform in, you know, red states or southern states or whatever. I love it. I love it. And when you guys go, but there's nothing to do here. We don't care, comedians. That's what we do. I fly in, check into the hotel, shower, do the show, and I leave. It's not like I'm looking for somewhere exciting. You know, I mean, obviously it was good to be in London and do shows, but we're not avoiding places because we don't think they're interesting. Sometimes it's just like, I know that I don't have a big fan base in certain parts of America. So if I were to perform there, what I would do is take a few days off to do a club in that area. And who would come to the club is people who just like, quote, comedy in general, but don't know me. I'm not at that stage anymore in that sense that if I only have a few days off a year to travel, I'm going to places where people know me and they would be willing to buy tickets at a rock club or a theater or pack the house at a great comedy club. People who want to be there. So with that few time off, I kind of got to go where I'm loved. And I will go anywhere. And I have gone most places. I've gone everywhere. So it's always important to check my website and see where I've been. So you don't go, oh, come back to here. So that being said, things are being worked out, but it's not based on suggestions. It's just based on timing and certain things. And it's boring. You're already bored. I'm bored. All right. Listen, I know this wasn't like excitement gamunga this week, but, I think maybe next week I'll talk about, oh yeah, I always wanted to tell the story of when I had a prisoner for a pen pal. And then, maybe we can talk some more holiday stuff or what's going on. All right. I think that's it. Oh, update on my neighbor. So my neighbor, the one that's a little off, he was hit by a bulldozer 6 years ago. He was like really high up engineer and he was hit by a bulldozer. That's why he has like, you know, he can't walk certain ways, but my building manager goes, but it in no way affected his brain. I'm like, oh, I'm sure it didn't. But I do think he might be like a drinky poo alcoholic pothead because I think he's always in pain and he's self-medicating. And that's why I have slurs like this. Cause I did run into him in the hallway the other day and he said, Jennifer, I knocked on your door a while ago, just once to give you some comedy tickets. And your friend opened the door and he was rude to me. And I said, Andy, that's not what happened. It was amazing. I summoned my inner Angelina Jolie. I didn't even have to summon it. It just came out. And I just said, Andy, you did not knock just once. You knocked and rang the bell for 3 hours straight, two nights in a row. My friend was not rude to you. I was home. I heard him. And I don't want any tickets. And actually, you were the one who was being rude. So please, I'm trying to go to work right now. I had like 50 bags in my hands. And he was like, well, all right. And I turned around and that was it. And I didn't feel any nerves doing it. I just felt like I'm done with this shit. I cannot have any more drama in my life at all. I'm not going to be a prisoner in my own home. That's it. And I reported it to my building manager and just said, he doesn't seem to understand that he didn't ring the bell or he's lying. I don't know. She assured me once again, he's harmless and I know he is. And my parents hate this. Jennifer, get out of there. He's dangerous. Trust me. I have a taser and mace at the ready near my front door. I could kick this guy's ass. He got hit by a fucking bulldozer. Okay. I'll bulldoze him right back to the gravel pit. Is that where Fred Flintstone worked, the gravel pit? Oh, I can't remember. You actually can email me on that one.
All right, you guys. Thanks for hanging in with this bizarre voice noises. I love you all. I really appreciate everyone who tweets to me about how much they love the podcast or Facebooks me or emails me. I'm blown away. Oh, so five of you did win that audiobook. The contest is over. But I love you guys. It made me really happy that so many people listen and seem very engaged with it. So I like talking to you guys. I hope you liked listening this week. Maybe it was insightful. Maybe it sucked. But, you know, that's just like life. You take an hour out of your night, you see what it does, and no pressure on you. You can turn this off, right? And turn it off right now because we're done. Till next week, have fun.